What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely.
So stay tuned. Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, in Burkina Faso, former President Blaise Compaoré had been in power for 27 years, and he was forced to step down after thousands of young people took to the streets in protest of a proposed constitutional change that would have extended his rule for several more years. But Compaoré's case is not limited to Burkina Faso. In many countries across the African continent, leaders have overstayed their initial mandates by either directly or indirectly changing the constitution. Currently, there are over 10 African leaders who have been in power for over 20 years, and many of these have the intentions to stick around a little longer. But as they continue to cling to power, a new momentum among young Africans who are staking a claim to power is threatening the often fragile political systems in these countries. After the Jasmine Revolution in North Africa that ousted long-standing dictators, analysts believed that the events that led to the downfall of such leaders as Hosni Mubarak of Egypt would have a cascading effect south of the Sahara. But a few years later, the political status quo still prevails in many of these countries. So the fall of Compaoré, whose grip on power spanned 27 years, was both shocking and an eye-opener for many. Still, many don't see this as the beginning of a sweeping youth revolution that will unseat long-standing leaders on the continent. But it does present many lessons on the political direction that many countries in the continent are taking. And that is the basis of our conversation today right here on Upfront. Do young Africans feel empowered to create political change on the continent?
When it comes to politics, the biggest number of youth in Uganda fear when it comes to taking part in politics or any political movement. So I have a feeling they can't be like those in Burkina Faso.
Yes, I strongly believe that the youth in my country have the capacity to drive political change because they are the foundation of society and because they are creative and innovative and they have a strong influence to community. Therefore, yes, they have the capacity.
Of course, they got the capability to spearhead it, but they are scared of some sagas which had happened in the country. Like around 2009, the Kayunga saga, many people were killed. So I think so many young people don't want to go there to face that challenge to be killed.
I will love you every day. Hey, 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 hey. I've flown around the world a million times and I've seen a lot of places and faces, but I'm always back to you. I'm on your mind. Ladies by my side each and every day, but I'm always back to you.
Are you serious? This is Upfront on the Voice of America. In case you're just joining us, welcome to it. On the show today, we're looking at youth protests and power change in Africa. With increasing vitality and importance throughout the region, these type of protests are certainly gathering momentum. Now, social movements have always played key roles in Africa's transition to democracy in power change scenarios. In many countries, youth have led movements and given a public voice to long suppressed or newly realized aspirations by masses of marginalized people in pursuit of justice, the fight for dignity around the continent. Now, often, Jackson, these aspirations lead to the fight for a more diverse and liberal society. People want equality, people want change. And we can see from recent examples of such movements, especially in North Africa over the past few years, to the more recent protests which led to the downfall of Burkina Faso's leader, we can see that young people on the continent are beginning to demand accountability from their leaders. They no longer willing to just sit back and accept a situation where they feel they won't get ahead in life.
And you're right, Nadia. In many cases, such youth-led social movements have often had to push against obstinate resistance. Many times they suffer punishment and failure. The few that succeed to create the necessary political change make a lot of noise, but behind that are numerous examples where such type of action by young people have been frustrated and crushed by these leaders. In fact, in many countries, the only type of protesters you see on the street are the ones that have been given a blessing by the ruling party. Other cases, like the case of Burkina Faso, they have succeeded. And in the process, they have contributed to producing a new and often diverse society and political order. Bagasi Kura and Henok Fenter, two of my colleagues here who follow African politics, and we have conversations about this quite often. Welcome, guys. And let's talk about the events that led to the youth uprising in Burkina Faso, the role and the ability of young people on the continent to organize themselves to create political change when they feel that a government is not responding to their needs. First of all, Bagasi, is this something that surprised you?
No, it didn't surprise me. I was after seeing how things evolved in the last few months, especially last year. I could see it coming. If you go back 3 years from now, you could see on social media that people were arguing, but at some point they stopped arguing and they were all saying the same thing.
Oh, really?
And then I realized, yeah, something is going on. Two young musicians decided to create what they call the broom movement, le ballet citoyen. They're going to use the broom, that's the symbol,
to sweep away
the government.
Right.
And they went to every neighborhood and set up committees. If you are four people, you are enough. Your number is enough to create a committee. And when I saw it, I said, that's a big
thing. This is the beginning
every
of a movement.
Every time I say there is a demonstration, people will just come out, you know. And
That was the beginning of the end of Blaise Compaoré. For many, you know, me and you sat here a couple of years ago, we're watching the Jasmine Revolution unfold from Tunisia to Egypt to Libya. And we kept thinking, you know, I think there's a possibility that this might be replicated in sub-Saharan Africa. Was this the moment for you when this happened? Did you go like, wow, it's actually happening, finally happening?
You know, I discuss African politics with my colleagues and friends from Africa. And with Bagasi, we have discussed Burkinabe politics a number of times. And in fact, when I saw Blaise Compaoré at the African Leaders Summit,
exactly,
I texted Bagasi with a picture of Compaoré. Is Compaoré ill?
Yeah,
and, you know, the discussion we had was, he controls the military, which is a very strong, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 special commando forces. And, you know, Bagasi's prediction then was he really controls the country and the opposition is not coming together. I guess that's the tipping point where everybody was just silent, which really reminds me of an old expression. Well, it's not an expression. It's more of a myth. About King Menelik, who increased taxes for his population, and he sent out his spies to give him feedback. His spies, they came back to the king, and they said, "Well, the population is quite unhappy." And he said, "Well, add more taxes." There was more taxes, and he sent out his spies, and they came back to him, and they said,
"To get the pulse of the situation."
What did people say? They say, well, they're not saying anything in public, but in private, they're talking about the tax increases. What if we complain and then the king adds more? And he say, add more taxes. He added more taxes.
He kept pushing and pushing.
Exactly. Yeah. And finally, they came back to him and they said, what is the reaction from the population? And they said, everybody's quiet. And he said, now is the time to reduce taxes. So when Baghazi was talking about, you know, the silence, because that really tells you a tipping point. There is popular discontent in any African country that's not democratic, even within the democratic structure, unless people have the right to change their governments, the right to self-administer.
Right.
Unless people have hope that if a certain politician doesn't do well, doesn't serve them well,
there's a mechanism to get him out of power,
right? By the ballot. Then this discontent requires some sort of organization.
Right.
And usually it's either the military or, I mean, in the case of Libya, it was the regional leaders who organized most of the demonstrations that overthrew Muhammad Gaddafi, Muammar Gaddafi. In Egypt, it was urban youth, educated urban youth who were unemployed and were amazingly connected through social media and other ways, who managed to get their messages across to the population and then finally the military to overthrow. So the whole point is, when you have such popular discontent that exists in many African countries, you need an organizing force to bring it to a tipping point where everybody says, you know what, enough is enough.
We're on the same page on this one, and then that's the point.
Yes.
So did it surprise you? I mean, you
I was quite
like
surprised.
You said, you've been talking about, you know, Burkina Faso. You talked with Baghazi about it. Were you surprised with what
happened? I was quite surprised because I do know from my conversations with Baghazi and some articles that I've read regarding Burkina that the opposition is highly fragmented. And Compaoré has managed to make sure that the opposition is not heard or is not taken seriously.
Right.
Yeah, so what you have is a combination of young people who are thinking outside the box and saying, you know what, it's not only enough just to say, down with Compaoré.
Right.
Just take a broom. Everybody is unhappy with the corruption. The unemployment is affecting a lot of young people. If we gather together, if we get together without any binding political cause, then we can bring about change.
And so they were bound by a non-political cause in this case.
I don't think, I mean, Baghazi could speak to that, but everybody was grieving. They had their grievances. It was mainly economic inclusion issues.
Right.
There was corruption, lack of accountability within the Compaoré government, which really brought everybody together rather than a single political platform political cause.
And one thing from outside people don't remember is a lot of crime of people who has been killed from day one of his regime in 97 when he killed Thomas Sankara and 12 other people during his coup until 6 months ago, because with the debate of changing the constitution, they will have to go through the constitutional court, and there was one judge that people said, he said, if it come here, I'm going to block it, and he was found
killed
along a roadside. They did an autopsy. Until today, it never been published. Africa, Africa. Na mambulu di nyoma gado kelenya kabo kelenya. Africa.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. We'll be back with more. Before we go any further, let's listen to some of the opinions on our topic today.
Political change, I think they can. It's just a matter of time. I know the situation is now worsening, so change can be possible in my country, Uganda. We the youth can, we really can, but I don't think it's not today. Because, for instance, we are living in a whole lot of fear, as in leadership have brought fear into the youth. So we are all afraid. Like I can't, you know, go to the streets and strike and do stuff, because We are threatened, we are living in a cage of fear.
The youth in Uganda are cowards. Very few can take part in any kind of political movement. So I don't think they can be like those in Burkina Faso.
une sono, réveillez-vous, une sono. Il est temps de se réveiller, Africa.
Thompson is a Nigerian reporter and TV host. She covers a lot of African politics, and I called on her to try to understand some of the differences between this generation of young people and the generations before us, the ones that ushered in African independence in terms of organizing for social political change.
We don't see the power of the masses coming into foreplay in Africa, even though, yeah, we've seen Egypt and all that. But it's not a common thing. For example, in Nigeria, some years back when there was the increase in fuel prices and then Nigerians as a whole came together and there were protests and, you know, people shut down the economy for some days. After a few days, when the government sent out army, everybody ran back to their houses.
Okay, so there was no intended systemic change because of that type
Exactly. No, there was a slight change, but not as much as the people wanted. And the people couldn't persist because people were afraid. Nobody wants to die. Nobody wants that.
And that's the thing I don't understand is because many young people that we've spoken to who will be on the show say that part of the reason why they don't take to the streets, why they don't resist, why they don't speak out, is that they're afraid to die.
I think that's one major difference between most Africans and the Western world. Because the Western world, they are ready to lay down their life to make a better tomorrow. But Africans are more caught up with what's happening today. What am I benefiting today? I don't want to lose my life. My family is there, you know. And so because of that, we miss out on a lot of things. We don't want to take risk and fight for what we believe in. We are easy to just give in and say, oh, okay, let's just manage this.
We are comfortable with the little that we get.
Exactly.
But then that kind of changed a little bit. That dynamic changed in Burkina Faso. Young people took to the streets and changed the system.
Yes. And I mean, that's one of the things that makes it a surprise or makes it to the news, because it was the young people who came together. They did not wait for the adults. They didn't wait for, you know, maybe those people do not believe enough, but they were able to organize themselves and they were able to be persistent until they got what they wanted. And that's not very common on the continent.
It seems to me that the generation of our grandfathers, the people who ushered in independence, were more courageous when it comes to fighting for social political change in their countries. Is that something that...
Well, I think that's a true observation, because, for instance, in my country, if you read the history of my country, you know, the founding fathers of Nigeria, those who fought for freedom, for independence, those who were the first. I mean,
they risked it.
Yeah, they did risk it. And they fought with everything that they had. They did not care. They didn't think, oh, I'm going to die or I'm not going to die. They stood up. They stood up against the white. They stood up against even Africans who came, you know, to take away what they believe was their rights.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there's something that went around Facebook recently that somebody posted on my page also, which is that these people were like very young, like maximum of 30, 35, and they had made impact. But the youth of today, I mean, we're too comfortable in our zones. If African leaders know that the people are ready, they know their rights, and they are ready to fight for their rights, then they will behave. But because they know that with a little push, I mean, I went to the Gambia, you know, some time ago, and people are afraid to say anything against the president, even in the corners of their houses.
Really?
Yes. How do you expect them to speak up against what he's doing?
And I've seen that in many African countries that have the semblance of freedom. They really talk about outside politics more than they speak about internal politics.
Exactly. I mean, even in the media.
And then you can't even talk about the president, criticize the president anyway.
For me, I mean, in Nigeria, where I'm from, yes, of course, you can talk about the president and all that. You may not be able to go on air and really criticize him. You know, there's a limit to how much, because you have regulations, you have the NBC watching over you and all that.
Right.
But as a person, you can talk.
Right.
In the social media,
on the street, on social media.
But I was just shocked.
And there will be no repercussions.
Yes. here, I was talking to somebody and we're just in a restaurant talking. And the guy
in the
was
Gambia.
Like, yes. Mm. And the guy was like, sorry, I can't talk about that. You could just disappear.
I wish I could tell you how many times I've had that around the continent where people cannot have an open conversation about their leadership.
Exactly.
Because they fear for their lives.
Exactly. So if they can't talk about it on a personal note, then how do you expect that the leader would not do what he wants to do, what he feels like doing?
Right.
Because there's nobody who would talk, because nobody wants to disappear, or nobody wants to be punished and all that. So because of that, I believe this is, it's not like the leaders in Africa are immune, you know, to the
Absolutely.
Voices of the people, but the people have not discovered their power. And even those who have an inkling of their power, they are not ready to pay the price.
Yes, we can maybe by demonstrating, showing the government that they are doing bad things to them. So the government can know that what we are doing is not pleasing the youth.
No, the youth in our country, they don't have that capacity, because most of the youth in Malawi, they have fear. So as we can talk of the government itself, it also gives the hindrance to the youth, because the youth, they don't practice the politics freely as how the youth in Burkina Faso, they are doing.
When you say in the same way, that will be wrong there. Maybe there are some ways that we can follow it. For example, in Burkina Faso, they use virus where which was not good for our democracy, for our rights and so what have you. In fact, there are some ways, for example, demonstrating peacefully, that could be the better way of doing it. There's a lot we can do apart from just going to the street and banning things.
I don't think the Burkina Faso youths used the right way to make change in their country. They could have used some certain ways, like marching in the streets. Yeah, I think they could have used that, not the other way around they did it.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C., and Nadia Sami is in Johannesburg, South Africa. So we're still talking about the issue of youth protests and the ability of young people on the continent to create social and political change. And in the studio with me, I have Henok Fente. He's is a reporter here from Ethiopia. Cora Bogasi is from Burkina Faso. He's also a young reporter who reports in our French to Africa service. We are talking about what happened in Burkina Faso and whether this was something that was anticipated by observers who had been watching the situation in Burkina Faso, where the president, Blaise Compaoré, who had been in power for over 27 years, was forced to step down after young people took to the streets and protested his intention to change the constitution that would have allowed him to stay on much longer in power. And so, guys, what does what happened in Burkina Faso mean for the rest of the continent?
I'm pretty sure today a number of African leaders
are looking at it and saying, no, that will never happen
saying,
to me.
I'm sure, you know, Kagame and Museveni are thinking, no, this is not going to happen in my country. But, you know, the reality is this: in Africa right now, we have about 60 to 65% of our population being younger than 30 years of age. And they're amazingly connected with one another.
Right.
They care about their future. And they also come from, you know, this different breed of Africans that have grown either through this dictatorships. And they have actually taken these states to be the status quo.
Mm.
And they're not necessarily trying to change these governments, but they're just trying to change their lives. And in the process, they end up changing governments.
Absolutely.
So, and that's the one thing that, you know, most of the leaders, once there's a tipping point, once everyone is silent and comes to a consensus, there's no stopping it.
So at this point, you know, the military has, as we speak, the military has announced that they have passed on the leadership to a transitional civilian leadership. Mm-hmm. But at some point, there was a feeling that the military had kind of taken the power away from the rightful owners, the yeah. young people who had actually brought down the downfall of Campo.
Yeah, I mean, right now, most people are content, but you still have a good chunk of people who said our revolution has been stolen because the head of state, the military guy, is the number two in Compaoré's security system. So, and he helped him literally with dirty cars and helicopter to leave the country. Even days after they left the country, they still have flight going in and out, taking all their belonging to them.
Really?
And he's
they had a transport system.
Exactly. And he's number one of his compound security system. He's in Ouagadougou because he's so unpopular. So he's hiding.
He had to leave.
But people think he's running from his bunker, you know, trying to guide this young officer. When they elected this civilian guy, most people are happy, but they still say, look, he was in New York, appointed by Compaoré for decades, and we think, and he was proposed by the army. It doesn't smell good. Maybe it's still the same conspiracy.
The same,
you know,
the same people.
Compaoré really has never left. You know, none of his people has been arrested. Everybody, you know, with all the corruption we talked about, they are all still free and nobody's bothering them.
But this is still the beginning. It's not, you know.
Exactly. And like, I think, you know, they can be free now, but in the end, because all these people writing these reforms are young people from my generation.
Right. So
they saw Thomas Sankara killed, they saw Norbert Zongo killed, and these are the heroes. And I think they will not miss this opportunity to demand accountability. And if you want to, you take one case, it's going to go back to the compound security system, and whoever is left behind will going to be caught a year or 2 years from now.
Okay. What can, say, young people take from this, if there are any, out of this situation in Burkina Faso?
I think all in all, in Africa, we're at this extraordinary junction in the history of Africa. Economies are developing throughout Africa. However, we don't see economic inclusion by way of creating jobs and opportunities for young people.
It is the status quo that is still enriching itself.
Exactly. Mm. And this comes from, you know, lack of good governance. We don't have institutions that hold our leaders accountable, which really creates a cyclical problem of corruption, and that takes away from the benefits of the youth. And young people are, like I said earlier on, they're connected with one another. They can see what the rest of the world is up to. They have the power to network with.
They can see what they're missing.
Exactly.
And they want to get.
Which brings them to action. And it's not, doesn't necessarily have to be political. Like I said, they're just trying to make their lives better, their future better. Mm. And in the process, they end up changing the continent and the system.
All right. Cora Bagasi and Henok Fente, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I would like to thank my co-host Nadia Sam in Johannesburg, South Africa. We would also like to thank all our listeners who contributed to the show this time around. And if you have any questions or comments or want to contribute to the show in future, remember to send us an email at upfront@voanews.com. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, my handle is @UpfrontAfrica. Let's connect again next week, right here, same time. On behalf of my colleague Nadia Sami, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye.